Welcome to the Hall of Blue Illumination, the podcast dedicated to M.A.R. Barker's legendary world of Tecumel.
Off the boat campaign, you know, James, when you and I had been talking about these issues before, I think I'd remarked to you that I found it somewhat unusual that people didn't like the Fresh Off the Boat campaign. And that always seemed a little weird to me because, well, first of all, it had worked for Professor Barker. That was number one. And number two, the Fresh Off the Boat campaign means that the player's lack of knowledge about Tecumel matches the character's lack of knowledge about their immediate setting. So it always seemed to me as though this was a very, well, dare I say, convenient way to start things off. And I think what ended up happening when people picked up the rules is that they picked up on the fact that here it's mighty Jakala, the city half as old as the world, a place that has a highly stratified society that's very unforgiving of foreigners. And I think that what it misses out on is that it really is up to the referee to use that as a way to introduce players to the world. You know, I think there's that section at the beginning of introduction to Jakala, where it says that players that venture outside the foreigner's quarter may have a 1 in 6 chance per turn of running into some sort of difficulty. And then there's mention of impalement as a potential result. And, you know, people sort of read that and said, oh my God, I can't go outside. And I think in some ways that was almost Phil trying to say, Professor Barker trying to say to people, well, yeah, this is a society that's going to control people's actions, but it's up to you to show it off.
I ran a one-shot EPT Fresh Off the Boat at our friendly local game store, and it went really well as a framing mechanism. It was spot on as far as people with no exposure to Tecumel being able to jump right in. And it's really incumbent on the referee to be able to know enough to provide description and setting content. And it's just, it didn't really feel strange or like any other game. It felt perfectly natural.
Well, the thing too, I find or have found about the Fresh Off the Boat structure as well is that it's actually works well for a referee who's new to Tecumel as well, because you don't have to the kinds of things that you need to know in advance are fewer than if you were running a campaign where all the characters are native Tsilyani, and I think it works well for both. I mean, if you're a new player, your character is new to Jakala, everything is just going to seem completely alien and unfamiliar to you, and it's been my experience anyways that people will tend to latch on to one or two things that immediately grab their interest and then go off in that direction. And as a referee, it's nice that, you know, you only have to worry about those particular things rather than all the moving parts, I guess, are a little bit fewer. At least that's been my experience when dealing with new players whose characters are also, you know, foreigners to Tsilyanu.
Speaking of foreigners, you can spend a lot of time in the foreigner's quarter without really needing to know all of that which surrounds it.
Well, and that brings up something else that I think is important to mention, because paired up with the being fresh off the boat, you know, player characters arrive, you know, there's the mention of you can negotiate with the fearsome bargainers of the Tsilyani, to, you know, get upwards of 150 kaitars for your boat, which I believe sounds tremendously wildly generous.
Optimistic. Yeah.
Optimistic. but in the end, yes, you end up, you would end up leaving Musajakala Harbor. Palajakala Harbor, the one on the north side of Jakala, is the military harbor. You can see that from the fact that there's the fortress around it, the barracks and everything else. That's the Palajakala Harbor. Musajakala Harbor, the one that's further to the south on the map, that's the civilian harbor. And from there, what you're supposed to do is to make your way through the streets to the foreigners' quarter. And almost certainly what you're going to find is, if you wanted to play that out, that there are going to be people down by the docks who will say, you know, why, yes, for only a few hlash or a kirgal or two, I will guide you to the foreigners' quarter, you know. And thence from there, they will take you to the house of the Red Dome.
Yeah, that's what I used when I did it.
Yeah.
I had them start in a different place, though. I was looking through the EPT book, and I didn't quite grok where I should have the characters land.
Sure.
So I just did my own thing and had a bit of a landing on the outside of the walls of the Foreigner's Quarter, next to the sea, kind of an old hole in the wall.
Oh, sure.
That was known to the locals. So then they started really near the hostel.
Sure, that makes it easy too. And once you get to the Foreigner's Quarter, there is a section in the Empire of the Petal Throne rules that's specifically for the purpose of generating patrons and potential adventurers. You are not expected necessarily to go venturing out beyond the walls of the Foreigner's Quarter. People, it's just one line in there that's just a mention of, and you are then able to wait for patrons to come and find you.
Yeah, let's put that in the show notes too. That'd be good to have an actual citation.
Yeah, well, actually, I just happen to have a copy of EPT right here.
Well, imagine that.
Just imagine having that right there.
This isn't the first time you've talked about this game, is it?
No. No, not at all. But yeah, it's in section 1110, Initial Encounters in Jakala. While still dwelling in the Foreigner's Quarter in Jakala, players are often visited by Tsulyani seeking their services. This form of employment is advantageous, since such Tsulyani employers or patrons can offer help, money, further personnel, and even magical items. By the way, these are cues, therefore, to the referee, if you think about it. Can offer help, money, further personnel, even magical items. There you go. You know, here are things that a first-level character would appreciate having access to. And then it goes on to say, by undertaking these missions, players also form social contacts within the Empire and begin to establish a place for themselves, a circle of Tsulyani friends, etc. And it goes on to explain how this ends up working out.
James has certainly amplified on those themes in his work.
Sure. Well, I mean, from my perspective, and Victor and I have talked about this a lot, I think that in those patron encounters, as we come to call them, those initial encounters in Jakala, they're sort of the core, I guess, of what of scenario building for Empire of the Petal Throne, at least in the initial stages of any sort of a campaign, because it's a way, all of those initial encounters, those patrons are ways to sort of be introduced to some aspect of what life is like in Tsulyanu. So, you know, whether it's a priest or a noble or aristocrat or some sort of a military officer or whatever, you get a chance to sort of see a small facet of all this complex, you know, societal structure that makes up Tsulyanu. And I think, again, it's a really, it's an easy way to, you know, get your toes wet, so to speak. You know, you just sort of, you know, you meet a priest, he's a priest of a particular deity, you become introduced to, you know, that god's beliefs and what the temple is like, what its social status and and role is in this society, and then you sort of go from there. And the patrons, I don't know, I find them very, very helpful, just to sort of flesh out. It's one of those building blocks, I guess, of Empire of the Petal Throne scenario building that I found very helpful.
Yeah, and to go along with that, one of the things at the very end of the TSR Empire of the Petal Throne book, you have section 2830, developing non-player characters. This is the next to last section of the actual rules, okay? And what he says here is interesting, because he says one important component of an enjoyable scenario is the construction of non-player characters who may become personalities in their own right. And he goes on further to say, each such character will have needs and goals, a place in society, a family and a background, ideas and opinions, likes and dislikes, and weaknesses and foibles of his or her own. The development of such characters is highly desirable for the scenario, since they add familiarity, continuity, and realism to what it might otherwise be simply a story composed of cardboard people with no more reality to them than a series of dice rolls. Which, there you go. A sort of backhanded warning to player characters, right?
Prescient backhanded warning.
Prescient, very much so. And he also, I mean, he goes on and he mentions just a bunch of people, and each one of these is someone who has a really in-depth background, and some of whom in my playing in Professor Barker's campaign we've encountered. Lady Manella, for example, of the clan of Sea Blue, and her companion, Lord Nagakus, the Luviani ne'er-do-well, is listed here. There's others. And the thing about it is that when you have those non-player characters developed ahead of time, that means that the Fresh Off the Boat campaign turns into a, well, who do the players find most connection with, right? And from there, you know, maybe they get employed once and then, you know, it didn't work out. Or maybe they find somebody who they want to adventure with again. And that allows people, rather than having to figure out Soliani society on their own, they have someone who will essentially be a door opener for them.
Sherpa.
In some cases, a patron of the, one might say, the classic traveler variety. James and I have talked about this before, that this table back in 1110 operates in much the same way as the patron table did in classic traveler.
Right.
Yeah. And in so doing, it's kind of like, okay, these are the people that are going to help you out, so you don't have to worry about, you know, If you say something wrong, someone will say, you must excuse my recently arrived friend. His grasp of our language is not perhaps fluent. And everyone will go, ah, barbarian. Yes, of course.
Also, these patrons, they're not just the people who can help you out, but they're also, that goes along with this, they're also the people to whom you'll wind up becoming indebted. So it provides a sort of ready reason for you to continue to associate with them and to take up the little activities that they will direct you to do. I've talked about this before, and I don't want to go too far off on this, but you know, the thing about Empire of the Petal Throne or Tacomel generally is that there always seems to be a social context to everything that actually happens. You know, it's not, they're not, the player characters are not classic sort of adventurers who are just simply off, you know, looking for, you know, loot for its own sake. I mean, I suppose you can do that, but I mean, initially, you know, everything you do has some sort of a consequence to it, because there will be people who will want to assist you in doing those things. Those will be opposed to it. And, you know, choosing one over the other will have consequences and generate further adventures and further connections. And you know, over time that builds up, and again, that's it, will just keep this ball rolling. And it's a I don't know it's a different sort of experience I have found playing than, say, a lot of other role-playing games. Certainly different than playing D&D, where the characters tend to be a bit more rootless, I guess. The society in which everything takes place is sort of vague, generally speaking, and very rarely has any kind of real, I don't want to say consequence, but I guess that's what I'm going to say, to what they're actually doing. You know, I mean, what happens in a dungeon is what happens in a dungeon. It doesn't necessarily mean anything in a larger context. But, you know, even a similar kind of delving into the underworld beneath Jakala, say, you're going to, it's not just sort of this empty, dead place. That's a real part of Jakalan society in a certain respect, because there are people down there in addition to things. And, you know, you loot a temple or a shrine or something like that, or a tomb even, and there will be people that won't be too happy about doing that, but you're doing that. And, you know, that in turn will lead to other scenarios.
Yeah, and along with that, I mean, one of the things that happened when Professor Barker first started playing D&D was he said, this is all very well and good, but where's the society? That to him, you know, the sort of rootless adventurer without having a social context was almost meaningless.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted the players to have something to react to, a larger stage that was going to be part of the background for what they were doing. And so, you know, Empire of the Petal Throne as a game is, you know, more than just an adaptation of original Dungeons and Dragons. It's an attempt to show what a society would be like when you have that larger context for players to react to.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's some players, well, in my own experience, that one of the things I've run into, and James, you and I have mentioned this to each other before, that one aspect of this is that some players love it because they're like, great, I now know where I am. And other players are like, I don't want to have to deal with this at all.
Yes.
I don't want to play this game. It's like, okay, you don't have to. There you go. You know. But I think in Professor Barker's opinion, and frankly, I agree with him in this, it may be subjective, but I agree, is that I think it's a richer world. I think it's a more interesting place. I think there's more opportunity for real adventure when you have this larger context to frame what the player characters are up to.
Oh, definitely. I mean, one of the things, too, that's that I've found helpful is that after a little while of these patrons, these non-player characters directing the actions, you know, of the player characters by suggesting, okay, I need you to recover this thing from the underworld or escort this person to this place or whatever. And after they begin to develop these connections and meet other people and so forth, it's much easier for the players through their characters to decide what they want to do next, because they may develop a particular affinity for someone they encounter along the way, or an enmity, and they will decide, okay, well, you know, next time we get together, I'd like to go do this, because they already have that. And again, it's this sort of, you know, little baby steps to being inducted into this larger context, which is why it's really helpful. I mean, and then once the campaign's been going on for a while, there will be this web of connections that will make it very, very easy to keep things going for a while. And I don't think
that's a hallmark of the setting.
It is. It very much is. I don't think I could imagine, I mean, in some ways, it's really colored the way I play other role-playing games, too.
Because for the better.
Most definitely. Yeah, definitely.
But the game within the game of societal interplay is a defining feature of Empire of the Petal Throne and its related game.
Well, yeah, I mean, like the Fresh Off the Boat characters, I mean, their goal ultimately is to become Imperial citizens. You know, subjects of the Petal Throne, so that they can go off and you know, do things on their own illicitly without having to worry about, you know, running into the sort of troubles that they would when they were just a bunch of unlettered barbarians who don't know anyone. I mean, I think Victor, you've told me on a number of occasions that, you know, a lot of the early play of Professor Barker's campaign, the original campaign, was, you know, these player characters, as they grew in influence and power and became Imperial citizens and then went on to do things. You know, they sort of, like, within the setting, they were significant people who were noticed by the powers that be and were able to have success that way.
Well, right. And in fact, that is, in fact, how the original characters moved along in Soliani society, is that to mention one person in particular, Michael Mornard, his original character might not have been the first character he played, but the character that he played for a considerable period of time, the original name of the character was Hptu. Okay. Dating from that time in playing Tekamel when people came up with somewhat nonsensical names, right?
Yeah, and I'm guilty of that, I'm afraid.
and the thing about it is that, you know, what happened to this mighty Thude barbarian from the southern continent with the almost unpronounceable name? He becomes the mighty general, you know, Kerdukoi Manashu, Manashu Chaishiani, right? Kurunme, that's right. His first name is Kurunme. Kurunme Manashu Hichaishiani, the general of the Legion of Lord of Manashu of Thrill. Okay. And after having served for a while as a Qazi, a captain in the Legion of Serku, Sword of the Empire. Okay. And what had happened was that Michael's character had gone on various expeditions and had been noticed by Serku, the aforementioned general of the Legion, and had been offered, after having achieved a certain amount of, you know, fame and glory, offered a commission rank in the Legion, and then had gone off and had his cohort fight Kadarni battles with, I think, the Ankoriani, and then from there went onwards for greater military fame and fortune. Okay. So that's an example of this very thing of people doing an almost Ellis Island like approach.
You know? Yeah.
Drop the accents, learn English, shorten their names. You know.
Yeah, well, we've talked about this too. I mean, the Soliani have a reputation both in the setting as well as for people who are familiar with Tekamel as a game setting, if only passingly, of being sort of, you know, xenophobic and very, you know, rigid and overly stratified and so forth and so on, all of which is true from a certain perspective. But nothing succeeds like success. It's like, you know, if you're one of those southern barbarians who managed to make it and become someone of some significance, that you get a patron, you've done things that are of note, after a while the fact that you came from somewhere else doesn't really matter so much anymore, and in fact might even be slightly in your favor at times, and you get assimilated in that. It's like the you know, you were always a Soliani in your heart, you know, it was, or you just were waiting for the opportunity to you know, show your true talents and your true, you know, destiny there.
Your true nobility.
Nobility, thank you. Yes, that's right. That's right.
That's right.
Exactly. Yes. Your native nobility that was there. And, you know, as your skein became more clear, you know, you were always, this was part of, you know, the weaver's plan for you to eventually, you know, wash up on the shores of great, you know, Jakala and, you know, catch the eye of some imperial prince who would recognize your nobility.
Where else step into your shoes of destiny but the greatest of all empires, I should think.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
Soliani would think.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
no,
from the Soyani perspective, that's exactly how it operates.
The great thing, too, I was just going to say, is that if, as a foreigner as well, is that, you know, if you fail and something goes badly, they can always say, well, he's just a foreigner, right? What did you expect?
Exactly. And so, and there's various hints of this around the edges of certain other elements of published work around Techimel. For example, you have in Deeds of the Everglorious, right? The history of the various different legions.
Which sits on my desk at this very moment, strangely enough.
Yes. There is the account of the Legion of Chulin the Foreigner.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's, I forget the number, but it's a Imperial Medium Infantry Legion, if I recall correctly.
Chulin the Foreigner, the 33rd Imperial Medium Infantry.
Yeah, there you go. And what's interesting about this is here you have Chulin of the Grass People.
Yes.
And who gets noticed by an Imperial Prince. I think it's a Selne. I can't remember if it's a Selne or Rerishkala.
Rerishkala.
Rerishkala, right. Okay. And, you know, Chulin has recruited people from his homeland to come and fight in his, you know, for the greater glory of Soyanu. And I have to think on some level to metagame this for a moment that one of the reasons why this legion exists is specifically to sort of model you too could do this, right?
So Chulin was not a player character in the campaign, you don't think?
Not as far as I know.
Okay.
No, in fact, actually, I am fairly sure Chulin was sort of an archetypal character.
Right, right, right.
Mm-hmm. They have posters of him spread around the Foreigner's Quarter saying, right. You too can lead a legion.
That's right.
If only you submit to your Tsulyani betters.
Well, I think, you know, if you could discern your proper place
indeed
in the Imperial society.
The
ladder begins with the lowest rung,
but it climbs into the skies if one
exactly.
is able to climb that far. Yes, exactly. And so here's this fresh off the boat campaign, and one of the things that, you know, is pretty clear from how this is set up is that you have some options at the beginning of the game. And if there was advice that I could give to anybody, the way that the rules were originally set up, you had about three options about things that people could do. And the first option was to, and these are in no particular order, but the first option that's, you know, clearly presented is waiting for a patron to arrive and to take them up on whatever offer of employment they might have and then go out in Soliani society. Okay, so that's option number one. Option number two was to go into the Hierolacte arena and to, you know, and thus gain the attention of people, you know, who would say, ah, you seem to be, you know, a young but mighty, you know, warrior, or, you know, you seem to be a crafty sorcerer, you know, whatever. And the idea being out of that you find people who will sponsor you and cozen you and find ways to further your career, and at some point you decide to retire out of the arena and go forth and do something else, right? And option number three would be then to, go down into the depths of the underworld and see what can be gleaned from the shadowed mysteries that lie beneath the city. And none of these are really all that separate from one another, but they are sort of different options that players beginning of the game get to have. I mean, James, when you were talking to me about setting up the Sakata's campaign, one of the things that you were thinking about, if I recall correctly, was, you know, what are those, you know, do those same sort of things, would they exist there? And my take on it was, of course they would, you know. It's a different city, but it's the same sort of idea.
Yes, yes. Yeah, that's one of the things that, I mean, the sort of the dynamic, I mean, Empire of the Pale Throne provides Dracala as an example, but it's not the only place where these dynamics still exist. I think similarly, you know, in the north, Kirgar probably has a similar kind of a thing going on with foreigners coming from different places, but.
Sure. You know, whether you are rough-tongued and patriarchal Gattoni, or if you are the sly and deceptive, to the Sogliani, Pijanani, or from one of the Yankoriani city-states, or even, you know, one of the desert tribesmen from, say, for example, you know, Milumania, or from even further afield, you know, like from Lorun, or from one of the states to the far northeast.
Or you could even be a renegade Mughal of Yani escaping the sort of stultifying bureaucracy of the Red Hats.
Well, we know all of that stuff because we're familiar with the
that
setting.
That is true.
New players, especially new GMs, are probably not going to be aware.
That is probably the reason why Jakala is the best. I mean, why it was chosen. I mean, the southern continent could be home to pretty much anything.
And you don't really need to specify where people are from in great detail. It's not really important to get the campaign started. That's what I think. That's part of the beauty of that setup.
It's true, though. I should point out my experience in running the Fresh Off the Boat campaign is that even though you say, okay, you're from this great southern continent that's unexplored and uncivilized from the perspective of the five empires, what I have found is that the players, if not initially, over time, they begin to sort of, they take an interest in where they're from, and they'll sort of provide little details about to sort of explain what their people were like beforehand. And I find that it's a lovely thing to sort of see them get into the sort of spirit of it, of creating and adding to Tekmel. And that's something that I know if you were just to present the setting to people sometimes in another way, they're often overwhelmed by it, think it's too complex, has too many moving parts, and there's no way I could do this justice. But if it's just, well, you're from somewhere far away and you have different beliefs, whatever they may be, you can make them up or not, as you wish. That seems less intimidating. At least, again, that's been my experience, that they're much more willing to do that and not treat Tekmel as somehow this inviolate thing that they can't touch. They can't mess it up in any way. This China, you know, shop situation, and they're the bull, that they worry about that too much. But
one thing that we have nowadays that didn't exist in the long ago, far away time prior to the internet is access to, for example, Pinterest boards. If you do a search on Tekmel on Pinterest, you're going to find a lot of very interesting imagery that people have gathered in order to help them visualize the setting. There's a certain amount of art in the Empire of the Petal Throne book, which is excellent and very evocative. But this harvesting of imagery from all across the web is really impressive because there are many places in the real world that are reminiscent of at least the way I imagine some places in Tekmel, and there's a whole lot of art that isn't Tekmel specific, but it is pretty darn close.
I think this was something we want to talk about in the future, actually, about sort of the inspirations of Tekmel, both Professor Barker's own and ours. And
well, that's a great topic for a future episode, absolutely. But on the topic of the Fresh Off the Boat campaign, simply going to Pinterest and typing in Tekmel is going to help a prospective GM or player get their mind wrapped around the kinds of things that they'll be called on to describe in game.
Mm.
I definitely agree with that. And in fact, actually, to pair that up with something, in the original game, you have at the very back, you have a key to the city of Jakala, right? That's part of it that goes along with the map that came in the original box set. And there's some interesting things there that I want to sort of point out to people, because even just reading through Appendix C, the key to the map of Jakala, that actually provides some verbal cues towards things, the whole listing of temples. And what's interesting here is that the temples themselves And the names of things give you some idea of what to expect. For example, here, the Prison of Little Ease, prison for debtors and persons cast out of clan. Interesting that that gets mentioned in Empire of the Petal Throne. We don't hear about clans in the original game right away.
That's right. That is. Oh, wow. I just had a mind meltdown. You're absolutely right.
Uh-huh. The Siridlanu slave market. Slave market, which means there has to be caffles of slaves, slave merchants, guards, people interested in buying slaves, right? And all of that feeding into what the place must look like. Even the names of the guest houses themselves tell you something a little bit about them. The Tower of the Red Dome, rest house for poor and indigent foreigners and visitors of no status.
Who may or may not sell their boats.
But that's quite distinct from the Palace of Mruthri, rest house for foreigners and visitors of upper status. Or the lordly domicile of the Hand of Hrugga, rest house for foreigners and visitors of noble status, right? So there's social ranking here. We're not staying in that place. We couldn't afford it even if we wanted to, right?
Or perhaps wouldn't even be let in even if we could afford it.
Right, wouldn't even be let in. And what's interesting here is that there's some places that are also named that relate to specific people, like, for example, the Armory of Vri of Burdimal. Vri is a non-player character, kind of a, if I recall correctly, kind of a short, stout fellow who's very good at what he does. And we hear about him, but we don't necessarily hear that much about, for example, Armory and Marine Outfitting Workshop of Hlel, the Fist of Glory. Truth be told, I'm not sure if anyone ever really investigated that place. Someone might have in the original game, in the original campaign. I came later, so by that time, all of these places were, oh yes, we'll go back to that place that I bought stuff before. Well, okay, fine. Tell me where. And also, there's some interesting places on the map that, if nothing else, are things that should make you think. Like, for example, the Priestly College of Rerektanu. Okay. Item number 50 on the map of Jakala. And it's like, really? Priestly College of Rerektanu. I thought all that stuff took place at temples. Huh, I wonder what's going on there.
The beauty with there being so much detail in the setting is that for someone who is willing to be creative, there's an infinite amount of more detail that can be added. And that Priestly College, for example, could be a hub for a lot of activity, and in no way are you limited by so-called canonical materials.
Right, absolutely. That's exactly it. And that's one of the things that makes, I think, Tekamel and the Fresh Off the Boat campaign so easy a place to start, because you're given a template to work with him, but there's lots of room for you to add your own stuff.
It's a real genie in a bottle, the original Empire of the Petal Throne rules. It is a complete game in an extremely amazing way to me.
Try this on for size. Here's one more. Just one more here, and just work with me on this. The Pyramid Tomb of the Lost King, whose name is erased from all monuments by his wife, the Queen Lorraine. It is only conjecture that this tomb belongs to him. There are no inscriptions. And her tomb is right next door, the Pyramid Tomb of Queen Lorraine, builder of the House of the Pleasant Hour. She was a special patroness of Dlamelish, the Lady of Sins, and dedicated her great temple in Jakala and dwelt there herself. It's like, I could be wrong, but I don't recall any major mention of either of these two places anywhere outside of the original rules, which means that you could pick that up and run with it and do whatever you wanted to with it, and you wouldn't have to worry about whether or not you were going against the written word of the famous professor.
But even if he wanted to do that, it's more power
to you. Sure, exactly. Which is exactly what Professor Barker wanted. I mean, he said, you know, I have now presented to you my TechML, now go make it your TechML.
Exactly, yes.
I think that's a pretty good note to wrap this episode up on. What do you guys think?
That seems good.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm liking it.
Thank you for listening to the Hall of Blue Illumination. You can email us your questions, queries, and other topics at citizen@techmlpodcast.com. You can also find TechML Podcast on Twitter and Facebook. Until next time, take care and have fun playing in the world of TechML.